evening, everybody, and welcome to Carving It Up Live right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, I am Bryson Carver. Very excited to be with you on a jam-packed Monday show. A lot of NBA stuff. We got some NFL draft stuff. J.J. McCarthy recently visiting the New England Patriots. I'm here to tell you right now, in about 30 minutes, if the Patriots draft him, it will reveal something about them and about my guy. Tennessee Vol, go Vols. Drop Mayo. I'll detail that in about a half hour. Also, my Golden State Warriors, in about 15 minutes, I will detail their playoff chances, their hopes. They've been playing really good basketball, as we've been talking about for some time on this show, why the Warriors have a chance to go deep in the Western Conference playoffs, despite how stacked the West is. I mean, the Warriors are the 10 seed. They won 46 games. Okay, that just goes to show you how deep, how loaded the Western Conference is. Talk about that in 15 minutes. Also, on tap, play-in predictions, okay? We got Lakers-Pelicans. We got Warriors-Kings. We've got the Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks, which nobody cares about. And we've got probably the best game in all, honestly, Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers. Fantastic jam-packed matchup between those two. Tons of stuff to get into in Carving Up Live. Also, why the New York Knicks, and they will draw a tough first-round matchup. They'll either get Miami or they'll get Philadelphia, but if New York can win another playoff series, second year in a row that they would do that, I believe they're about to land a superstar who is disgruntled in his current situation. More on that in 45 minutes. Glad that everybody stopped by. Before we get any of our sports topics, I shouldn't say before we get into sports, because this does have to do with sports, but more broadly, society as a whole, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that today is Jackie Robinson Day, 77 years ago on this day, April 15th in 1947. Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Again, there's obviously the movie about it, 42, which came out about a decade ago, starring the late, great Chadwick Boseman. Harrison Ford was in the movie as well, playing the guy who signed Jackie Robinson. But, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine who actually creates graphics for this show and for everybody else at the Grid Network, Alfred Parsar Jr. Shout out to Alfred. And we were just talking about just the remarkable, almost unheard of temperament. I mean, the things that this guy had to deal with every single day for his career, from players, from fans, from other organizations. And the fact that he didn't, to be completely honest with you, lose his you-know-what, which virtually anybody would under those circumstances, is just a credit to the kind of human being he was. And people forget, we talk about, obviously, the far greater thing that he did was break the color barrier. Jackie Robinson was a darn good baseball player, Hall of Fame level guy, six-time All-Star, won an MVP, won a World Series, led Major League Baseball twice in stolen bases, and really, again, changed sports as we know it, changed society, and was a big factor in doing that. So just wanted to say happy Jackie Robinson Day, and certainly, you know, remembering number 42 on this momentous occasion, this momentous day, 77 years ago when he broke the color barrier. Shout out to the late, great Jackie Robinson. And by the way, can I say this? I heard this on the radio before we get back into current sports topics. I heard somebody say in the radio, and I kind of agree with this. I think the Dodgers should play the Mets every year on Jackie Robinson Day, because the Mets, where their stadium is, I think I saw this, it's not that far from where the Brooklyn Dodgers used to play. So it's like kind of like baseball's a sport more than any in America that is, and sometimes for better or for worse, in this case, obviously for better, that is very tied to its history. And so from that perspective, I feel like that's something you could kind of play into. And so I don't know, it's an idea that I heard. This is not my idea. I heard it on the radio this morning on ESPN. I thought it was something worth considering, no question. So transitioning back into today's sports, but first, you know, they say when it comes to stocks, right, you buy low and you sell high, and I often treat takes on this show as stocks. I try to, especially as it pertains to teams or athletes, individual athletes, try to buy low. You know, maybe this particular player, this particular team, not a lot of people are paying attention to, but I'm like, just wait, they're about to break through. And you want to sell them high when everybody's high on them. Now, I'm really good at buying low. I'm terrible at selling high. I often sell teams when they're at their lowest peak. See my Denver Broncos 2022 Super Bowl pick. I abandoned that after 5 weeks, and I sold the stock for about as low as it could have been bought for. Okay, so that was a disaster. In this case, I'm selling high on the Los Angeles Lakers. They are done. Point, full stop. So I have been, and it's weird because I'm one of the very few people, and whatever you, if you want to consider me a member of the media or just in the podcast space, one of the very, very few people, at least outside of the, outside of Lakers Nation, that's like, hey, they get the right matchup, this team can go to the finals. Are you kidding me? This team's absolutely good enough. LeBron James, who just, what, he dropped 28, 17, and 11. I mean, the guy's been awesome. LeBron James, by the way, it should be noted, over the past seven games is averaging 37-9 on 51% from three. And the Lakers have gone 6-1 that stretch, that one loss coming to the Warriors, who I'll talk about in about 10 minutes or so. But despite how good LeBron's playing, despite how good Anthony Davis is playing, he did get hurt against the Pelicans, who the Lakers obliterated yesterday. But according to him, he's going to be ready for the playing game again in New Orleans against his former team tomorrow night, which is great news for LA. Or is it? Of course, you want AD to be healthy, but their goose is cooked either way. So if they beat the New Orleans Pelicans, for those of you who may not know, Lakers the 8 seed. And the way the play-in tournament works, the top 6 seeds in either conference, they're automatically in their playoff teams. 7 versus 8 play. The winner of that game is the 7 seed. The loser of that game plays the winner of the 9 versus 10 seed game. Obviously, the loser of 9-10 seed is done. The loser of 7-8, winner of 9-10, they play each other on Friday. Winner gets the 8 seed in the playoffs, and you have your playoff format, and you kick off, or tip off, rather, on Saturday. So if the Lakers beat the Pelicans, they get the Denver Nuggets, who they have not beaten in a year and a half. They've lost 8 straight games to the Denver Nuggets. I'm here, oh, well, Bryson, you know, the games have been close. Funny, I don't hear that same argument when I hear that the Golden State Warriors Los Angeles Lakers series that I've been lectured. Oh, the Lakers just stopped Golden State. No, they didn't. Lakers blew out Golden State twice. That was games 3 and 6. Warriors blew out the Lakers twice. That was games 2 and 5. Games 1 and 4 were nip and tuck. Game 1 was tied with a minute and a half left. Game 4 was a 1-point game with about a half minute left. So that could have went either way. Could have went, both games could have went to Golden State. Would have been a different series. Don't hear that same logic for that series. But all of a sudden, the Lakers, who, again, yes, the games were close a year ago, still got swept. Anthony Davis still got bullied by Jokic. LeBron James, as great as he is, he's got to face Gordon. He's got to fit Michael Porter Jr. Jokic, they can throw a lot of bodies at you. Michael Malone did a good job making certain adjustments in that series against the Lakers to kind of neutralize guys like Reeves. D'Angelo Russell had an awful series, kind of attacking him defensively to the point where you have Darvin Ham having to go to guys like Dennis Schroeder, who, by the way, isn't a Laker anymore. If you lose, which I'm hearing some pundits say, hey, the Lakers should just tank this game, win the second playing game, get in as the 8 seed, and not have to play the Nuggets to the Western Conference Finals. Well, the problem with that is, A, and if it ever did get out that the Lakers tanked a playing game, can you imagine the vitriol toward LeBron James, which I have to admit I would be part of that, even as a guy who thinks LeBron's the greatest ever. But if you play the Golden State Warriors, which, let's be real, that's who they would play if they lose to the Pelicans. Golden State's going to beat Sacramento. Let's not waste any time on that. If you play the Golden State Warriors, I'll talk about the Warriors more broadly speaking in just a minute, but Steph Curry, you know, there's this narrative. Skip Bayless has been one of the primary people pushing this, just the same way he does with the LeBron's not clutch narrative. Steph comes up small in big games, which is nonsense, obviously. Steph Curry, in elimination games, here's his numbers, folks. Averages 29, 7, and 6 with a steal and a half per game. And he's 9 and 5. And some of those, I can remember some of those elimination games. You talk about the game 7 against OKC when he, what would he drop? 36 points, including a dagger 3 at the end. I can remember a near 30 plus point triple double in game 7 against the Rockets in the 18 Western Conference Finals to dispatch of them. I can remember a game against the Toronto Raptors where he dropped 31, hit the tying shot in a game that the Warriors won by a point. I can remember, oh yeah, there was that game where he dropped 50 against the Sacramento Kings. That's who you run into. And for the record, it should be noted, Golden State has beaten the Lakers 3 out of 4 times this season and has played better than the Lakers as of late. Only lost to LA. Lakers won by, again, literally a single point. So either you take on the champs from last year or you take on the champs from 2 years ago. And that's who, if again, win or lose this game against the Pelicans, who minimum one of your next 4 games is going to come against. The Warriors will beat you just out of quickness and agility and shooting and a significant advantage. Head coach, even Lakers fans would agree with me on that. Steve Kerr's miles beyond most coaches, especially Darvin Ham. Or you got to play Denver, who outplayed you last year, who Jokic abused, one of the best defensive players of this generation, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James, for as great as he is, he had a 40-point game against the Nuggets. Didn't matter. Anthony Davis, I think, had a 40-point game that series. Didn't matter. They can expose D'Angelo Russell. Austin Reaves can be neutralized given their length in terms of their guard defenders. And that series will be over in five, maximum six games. So pick which way you want to lose. Do you want to lose this week and have your season in this week, or a week and a half, 2 weeks from now? Because that's the reality the Lakers are in. And they can thank the San Antonio Spurs, who were down big to Denver on a game this Friday. And that was a game that mattered to Denver, because had they won that game, and then obviously they did beat Memphis yesterday, Denver would have been the one seed, which is what they've been gunning for some time. If not for that comeback, the Lakers would be the 8th seed. And if they win, they get to avoid Denver to the Western Conference Finals. In that case, I'm all in on the Lakers. The problem is they would either have to take on the 2023 champs, the best of seven series in which the last time they played, they got swept, or the 2022 champions, who they've lost three or four against this season, were in a dogfight series last year with, and again, a Warriors team that had Jordan Poole on it. It's not going to happen this year. And I thought it could. I, honest to God, I was one of the very few people. Lakers are playing bad. Oh, they're fraught. I'm like, no, they're contenders. You got healthy LeBron, healthy AD, you're contenders. That's not to say a game against Golden State isn't going to come down to the last 30 seconds. A series with Denver isn't going to be close, if you want to call it a quote-unquote close sweep. Knock yourself out. You know, the Brooklyn Nets had a close sweep against the Boston Celtics. Had that turn out for them. Still lost. So, again, I've been one of the very few people on the Lakers train, but we know styles dictate fights. Like, I don't believe in Phoenix at all. Haven't since the day they made the Bradley Beal trade, I've not believed in the Suns. I think they're going to beat the Minnesota Timberwolves, point blank. I think they match up better. I think they play better against Minnesota as of late. We saw what they did to the Timberwolves yesterday, and we know what Rudy Gobert is in a seven-game series. They're going to beat Minnesota. That does not mean they're going to win the championship, because then they're going to run into either Denver or the Lakers, and they're not going to run the Lakers. They're going to run into Denver. They're not beating them. Styles dictate fights, and the Lakers, I think they'll beat the New Orleans Pelicans. More of my predictions later in the show, but after that, they're screwed. They are screwed. Beat Steph Curry in a do-or-die game. Not many have done that. LeBron was one of them, but that was 8 years ago. Or knock off the defending champions who you didn't get a single game off of last year and haven't gotten a single game off of this year. Styles dictate fights, and for the Lakers, they're simply outmatched. Got some comments by my buddy Grady Edwards. What's up, Grady? Lakers got a simple path. Win and go home in five. Lose, and you probably can make the Western Conference Finals, or go home in the play-in. He says, here's my question, Bryson. If you're the Lakers, do you throw the game tomorrow and shoot bricks off the backboard purposely? Absolutely not. This is a situation where it's San Antonio tanking for Wemby last year. Like, this is you do have LeBron and AD, so you do have to factor, hey, maybe they could go on a run. Even if they are outmatched, it is still LeBron and AD, and you never know what can happen theoretically, on paper at least. That'd be a terrible look for the NBA. And I'm a LeBron guy. It'd be a horrible look for LeBron if that were the case. Like, man, you're dodging Denver? Really? And by the way, it would be a massive disrespect to Golden State to say, so you think you just throw a game against them so you can beat us, just walk all over us? Okay, watch this. So I think, no, I would absolutely not do that. It'd be a terrible look for the Lakers. Grady, Lakers are a better team than Golden State. They win in a seven-game series against your Warriors, but in a one-game scenario, give me Golden State. Well, I think Golden State's better than the Lakers for a myriad of reasons, but in a one-game scenario, absolutely. And by the way, I mean, the game's in L.A. The Warriors beat L.A. in L.A. twice this year, and not to mention the Warriors have ironically been a better road team than home team, which doesn't make any sense at all, but the Warriors are 25-16 on the road. They've won, if I'm getting my math right, 17 of 21 on the road. So 17-4 in their last 21 home road games. So you could argue if the game was a chase, then the Lakers might actually have a better shot. But yeah, they're screwed. Point blank. Lose to New Orleans, get eliminated on Friday by Golden State. Beat New Orleans, get knocked out in five or six games max against the defending champions. Who, by the way, it should be noted, and then I'll get into the Warriors. I think Denver, if you watch since the All-Star break, and the Nuggets have been great since the All-Star break. I think, what do they have, three, four losses? I mean, they haven't lost a whole lot of basketball in that stretch. I mean, they lost to Kyrie on a buzzer beat on that left-handed hook shot. you know, they lost a couple games to Phoenix in that stretch. If you watch Jokic, Jamal Murray, Michael Malone's body language, they wanted that one seed because of the home court advantage. Denver's got a great home crowd, but also the altitude that matters. I think Denver, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Nuggets may have the highest home win percentage in NBA history. I could be wrong on that, but it seems like I remember reading that last year. I can't imagine this year it's gone down. So that altitude's a big factor. And so I think because of that loss to San Antonio, where they just flat out let go of the ropes and lost a last second shot at the end, and Wemby was fantastic and capped, to me, the greatest rookie season we've seen since Wilt Chamberlain, to be completely honest with you. But that's another story for another day, or another topic for another day. Because of that loss, Denver, man, they are pissed. And now they get to face the Lakers, who they swept last year. Remember, if people forget, remember when the Nuggets, you had the voice of the Nuggets saying like, oh, we're the Lakers daddy and all this, whatever. And then you had LeBron and AD openly saying, yeah, that's who we're going to need to beat to win a Western Conference title. And again, kind of calling a quasi-rivalry, which technically it is, at least my definition of a rivalry is, at least in the NBA, you got to beat each other once in a seven-game series. Like, play-in doesn't – if the Warriors beat the Lakers in a play-in, to me it's still not a rivalry because the Lakers beat the Warriors in a seven-gamer. It's that simple. Lakers beat Denver in 2020. Denver beat the Lakers in 2023. But so there's a little history there. But again, you don't really like the Lakers. You're pissed at how you ended the season. You basically blew the one seed. Denver, and plus you get extra rest. You got home court advantage. Like, Denver's going to have a lot to prove. You know, we haven't had a back-to-back champ since the Warriors in 17 and 18. So, and again, obviously I'm pulling for my Warriors to win it all. About to talk about them in just a second. But in a weird way, I think the Nuggets going back-to-back is good for the NBA. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't like the parody that's going on. I hate it. The NBA at its most popular, 80s, 90s, 2010s, has always been at its most popular when there's a dominant villain. 80s, well, of course, could you call the Lakers and Celtics villains? I mean, I guess to each other they were. But, you know, broadly speaking, not really. The Bulls, for reasons I'm not quite sure, weren't perceived as villains. The Warriors, just because they acquired Kevin Durant, were. But whatever the rules and regulations there are to becoming a villain, dominance in the NBA and in any sport, the ratings tend to smile upon that, you know? And so, like, Kansas City's dynasty, I think, is great for the NFL. But transition to Golden State now. So many of you all know that I'm a massive Warriors fan. Been so since the 13 season. Remember that year Jermaine O'Neal was on that team. Warriors ended up winning 51 games, losing a heartbreaking seven-gamer to the Clippers. Next year, they hired Steve Kerr, and the rest is history. The Warriors beat the Jazz yesterday. The game after Steve Kerr saw, okay, the Lakers are kicking New Orleans' teeth in. Sacramento's doing the same to Portland. Like, okay, we're going to call the dogs off. You know, Steph and Draymond were already resting. We're going to sit Clay, Chris Paul, all the guys that matter to us contending for a title or going deep in the playoffs. In general, we need to sit those guys, have them ready to go for Tuesday and beyond that. So I am befuddled as to how a lot of the narratives in the national media today as well. I mean, come on, Golden State, they're not going to make a run this year. They're done. No, they have no chance. But they believe in the Lakers, who would have to face Denver in round one. Golden State, if they get through the play-in tournament, would have to face Oklahoma City, who, to Oklahoma City's credit, and I think Oklahoma City's a contender. At full stop, I absolutely believe they are. Listen, they're young, but I believe in Shea, all the guys they got over there, Giddey, Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams. I think Dagnall's a phenomenal coach. He's my coach of the year, but that's a better matchup for Golden State than Denver is. Golden State can get out of the play. I mean, some people said they can't get out of the play-in tournament. Sacramento, maybe a doozy, even though Sacramento literally lost their best player off the bench and one of their starters in Kevin Huerter. And Golden State's better this year by record, by virtually every statistical category, than they were a year ago. And Jordan Poole's not there. Golden State, in the last 39 games, since the Warriors, they lost, I remember vividly, and this was one of the points in time where I was this close to selling my stock of the Golden State Warriors. I didn't do it. I said, let's wait. Let's let this bake. Let's let it play out. Since then, last 39 games, that's basically half the season. Here's what the Warriors have done. sixth in offensive rating, sixth in points per game, 10th in field goal percentage, sixth in three-point percentage, first. Oh, the Warriors, this tiny basketball team. The Lakers just bully them. Warriors are first in rebounds. The third in assists by just a tick behind Indiana for number two. Okay, fifth in defensive rating. Oh, they're small. They're fifth in defensive rating. 10th in points given up. Fourth in net rating. And most importantly, they have the third best record in basketball in that stretch. And the only two teams that have a better record than Golden State are checks notes. The top two Vegas favorites to win the title, Denver and Boston. Only teams with a better record than Golden State in the last 39 games since late January. Okay, the NFL playoffs are still going on then. Since late January, that's the reality of what we have in the NBA play-in tournament with these Golden State Warriors. And I said 3 weeks ago, after the Warriors lost a game to Timberwolves, I'm like, gosh, I'm close to selling the stock. Like, they're not a secondary consistent score of Steph. I don't know if I can believe this team. As much as I believe in pick integrity, and I stand by that. What your pick is, your pick is. I may have to move off of it. But I said, and I put this, actually, I didn't say it. I tweeted it. Before the Warriors' next game against the Miami Heat, let's put this up here. Warriors, this is from March 26, 2024, right before the Warriors play the Miami Heat. Warriors have 12 games left and sit at the 10 seed entering tonight's game. Ironically, they're still the 10 seed. I said on yesterday's show that I'm as close as ever to selling stock in my Warriors as a title threat. But if they can go 9-3 or better down the stretch, I'll maintain faith of another title run. Well, thankfully, they did better. They did one game better. They went 10-2 down the stretch. Those losses by 5 to the Pelicans in a game where the Warriors had a 6-minute stretch in the second quarter. I'm not even kidding, where they might have played their single worst basketball of the year in that 6-minute stretch. That Steph was turning the ball over constantly. They couldn't buy a shot. They couldn't create open shots. They couldn't defend. New Orleans was shooting the lights out from three-point range. An awful, again, 6-minute stretch, that's an eighth of the game right there. And it was a three-point game with 30 seconds left, and Steph had a shot to tie the game. The other loss in that stretch was to Dallas on the second night of a back-to-back by 2. On the road, by the way, where the Warriors have been excellent. So the Warriors have played literally as well as everybody in the NBA outside of Denver and Boston, who are the presumed favorites to win their conferences. Again, with playoffs, that's why we have the playoffs. There's no guarantees, but those are the two Vegas favorites to win the title, rightfully so. Warriors have played better than everybody except for them, and obviously they're tied with Dallas. I think Dallas or OKC for the third best record in the NBA in that stretch. So why can't we believe in them? It's like I've said. I said in the offseason, say it today, given how it's kind of come together over the last few games, is that the problems that plagued Golden State last year were almost all self-inflicted. And if they weren't self-inflicted, it wasn't for basketball reasons. Andrew Wiggins was gone for, was it a month and a half due to personal reasons with his family? And so it completely messed up his conditioning, messed up his rhythm, and he was a shell of himself in the playoffs. Draymond Green, self-inflicted. Right? The situation with Jordan Poole. Now, Jordan Poole, the self-inflicted stuff was, and we saw it in Washington this year, dribbling the ball off his foot, taking awful shots, being a 0 out of 10 on defense. And Steph Curry, again, the only sort of basketball reason the Warriors kind of nosedive at the end of the season, Steph Curry had 2 major injuries that year. The Warriors struggled when he was gone. This year, Steph's been healthy. Klay Thompson. Played 77 games. And for the record, Klay's having a great stretch, averaging about 20 points a game. He dropped 25 in like 20 minutes yesterday against the Jazz. So Klay's playing excellent. Steph is Steph. We don't have to worry about him. Draymond has been tremendous. The Warriors are a different basketball team when he's in the lineup. And in what was, I thought, season from hell part two, where he suffers 2 suspensions. You have the, again, Steph's not getting the primary second score. Kuminga sort of comes along, but then he doesn't. But now Kuminga's back, playing him like himself. Draymond's looking like himself. Klay is looking viable. And I've been critical of Klay this year. Klay's playing his best ball of the year. Chris Paul has been a seamless fit off the bench. And you have Steph Curry and Steve Kerr manning the ship. Yeah, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Sacramento's going to be, I'm not going to say a blowout, but Warriors should win that game comfortably. And at that point, you either face a Lakers team you've beaten 3 out of 4 times this season to match up well against, or a New Orleans team who, sure, they beat you on Friday, but again, you beat yourself most more than New Orleans beat you, and they will suffer 2 potential blowout losses to the Lakers. and will be in panic mode at that point. They had a shot to get the sixth seed on Sunday, and by Friday, they may not even get in the playoffs if they lose this week. So by every metric, again, we can show you one more time, and it's mind-boggling that people seem to be just ignoring this. The Warriors are top 10 in basically every category that matters. Offensive rating, points per game. And this is in the last 39 games, by the way, since they flipped a switch. Sixth in three-point field goal percentage, and that's on high, high volume. First in rebounds per game, even though they're the smallest team in the league. Funny, they're first in rebounds. Third in assists per game. Fifth in defensive rating. They can lock you up. 10th in points given up. Fourth in net rating. And only Denver and Boston have won more games than them in this stretch. It's that simple. So, yes, I absolutely believe Golden State can go on a run. And the fact that they don't have to play Denver until the Western Conference Finals when they get in the playoffs is, I could not tell you how big that is. Now, will facing Denver be a daunting task? Yes, because similar to the Lakers, they also didn't beat Denver this season. Yes, they suffered some close losses, but if I'm not going to give the Lakers a pass on that, can't give the Warriors a pass on that. There was a game where Jokic had a half-court shot, the buzzer to beat Golden State. There was two games in Denver. One, Steph had a layup, a tough layup over Jokic to tie the game. Missed it. There was one game where both the Splash Brothers were awful. It was still a close game late. Denver pulled away on Christmas. And then there was a game most recently where Denver kind of just pulled away in the fourth quarter doing what Denver tends to do. So that would be a tough matchup. I'm not going to lie to you. Outside of that, they can beat anybody in a seven-game series. Anybody. Inexperienced Oklahoma City. Inexperienced Minnesota, who has Rudy Gobert, and the Warriors have had a lot of success in the past against Rudy Gobert. Phoenix, who, you know, doesn't have a point guard, who we got Clippers who are beat up. Dallas is, to me, the toughest matchup outside of Denver in the West. I think Dallas could be scary in this year's postseason. But you've had success against Luka in the playoffs. That matters. Look up and down the West. Yeah, seven-game series. I think we've learned enough not to count the champs out, not to count Steph Curry out. We give LeBron James benefit of the doubt for the record, as we should. He's proven it enough. The same respect and the same level of hesitation to a certain degree, even if you are picking certain teams to beat Golden State, should be adhered to when considering the fact that you got number 30, one of the greatest basketball players who's ever lived on the floor. Golden State, just as big of a threat now as they were 2 years ago, and certainly more so than last year. The locker room is in way better shape. They're a way better defensive team. All of the above. I have a lot of faith in my Golden State Warriors. Let's see what we've got here. Grady, if this was prime LeBron, this Lakers team would beat Denver. He says my answer would be yes in seven. Yeah, prime LeBron, that's a different story. I mean, the 2018 LeBron to me is like the last, like, oh my God, this is the best player in the world, and it's literally not even close. If you had that, okay, we might have a different conversation, but you don't, even though he's still great. John, let's go Bulls. Listen, you know, I'll pick the Bulls. I'll predict the four playing games, two East, two West, at the end of the show. Listen, DeMar's been playing great. DeMar is, okay, if they get DeMar clutch player of the year over Steph, I think it's going to be highway robbery. That said, DeMar should finish in second. He should finish in second. Steph, Giannis is somewhere in there. Giannis's clutch stats are good. Steph should be clutch player of the year. Let's be real. And by the way, his team won like seven more games than DeMar's. And DeMar's teammates were better in the clutch. Steph's were not. Grady, everyone wanted to be like Mike. That's where the Bulls weren't villains. That's fair. That is a absolute valid point. And I guess I'm looking at the perspective of Mike off the court. And listen, not the only athletes to do this, but Mike wasn't. And I don't think this contributes for the record in any way in the GOAT debate. To me, the GOAT debate should not be about shoes, which favor Jordan, or who's a better person, which favors LeBron. The GOAT debate should be about what happens on the court, not who you like more. That's a different conversation. Jordan wasn't the greatest, you know, was a guy who embraced the nightlife, which for the record, a lot of guys do. Dennis Rodman was that on steroids. Scottie Pippen was kind of aloof, you know, not the easiest guy to wrap your arms around. Like that, I don't think perceiving those villains is a stretch. But if, you know, listen, you're right, Grady. Everybody did want to be like Mike. Like that's that factor. The Spike Lee commercial, all of it. The Jordan's marketing team is one of the greatest in the history of America. Like it's that simple. Oh, see, Grady, I knew a troll was coming at some point because I know my buddy Grady, and he loves it. But you know, I'm the same way. Bryson, Clay would look good in a Laker uniform. You know, I have to admit, he would look good in a Laker uniform. That said, ain't going to happen. Because given the money, Clay, to me, what Clay's going to do this summer, and for those of you that don't know, Clay's a free agent. Clay will, to me, either take a pay cut to stay in Golden State, just because you want to stay with Steph and Draymond, and I'm not sure if he'd be cool with a long-term reduced role. To me, that's kind of the deciding factor. That, and more importantly, if they go on a run this year, either he will take a pay cut to stay in Golden State or take more money elsewhere. I don't think the Lakers have enough money to pay him. They're paying LeBron, paying AD, paying Austin Reeves. They gave D'Lo a nice contract. Like, that would be, you'd be really pushing it to pay Klay Thompson. Like, you probably have to let, I don't want to say Rui go, but you may have to let Rui, probably move Rui in some way, shape, or form. But not a happening. Grady, I don't love Boston. I feel like there's four legitimate teams in the West who could beat Boston. Okay, you have four, so I say, you said that being said, Boston probably wins the East. Oh, listen, the East is weak this year. I mean, for context out East, okay, I just want to look at the standings, which are the final standings now, since the regular season's over. Boston's the one seed. New York, I'm going to talk about the Knicks in about 15 minutes. They're the two seed. The Knicks are 14 games back of the Celtics. 1-2 seed is separated by 14 games. The Knicks are only, again, Boston Knicks, only two teams out East to win 50 games. Out West, we had five teams win 50 games, and you had Phoenix, New Orleans finish with 49. The 10-seed Warriors are 11 back of the 1-seed Thunder. 10-1. The 2-seed, as close as you can be to 1-seed, is 14 games back of Boston, and Golden State, for the record, is 11 back of the 1-seed as the 10-seed. New York is 14 back of Boston as the two. It's mind-boggling. So, So I'll address that. I'll put your comment back up here, Gray, and then I'll move on to my only. And I know Gray is a big Patriots fan, so I don't know if he'll love this next segment. But I did want to talk about the Patriots for a brief moment before we go back to the NBA. You said I don't love Boston. I feel like there's four legitimate teams in the West that could beat Boston. Okay. So Denver, obviously. Denver can obviously, I would pick Denver if they face Boston in the finals. I love the way Dallas is playing. I love the way the style Dallas is playing. They've been better defensively. The Gafford trade has changed everything for them. Kyrie has really found his role in Dallas. Luka is not as ball dominant as he used to be. They move the ball better. They play at a quicker, more up-tempo pace. So I think Dallas is very dangerous. I think Dallas would have a shot to beat Boston. I think the Lakers have a shot to beat Boston. That's three. I think Golden State has a shot. We literally saw it 2 years ago, albeit different rosters, but to beat Boston, they tend to struggle in the presence of Mr. Curry late in games. OKC's tough because I really like OKC. I think OKC's a true contender. I'll give him a shot. So I'll say five. Five. I don't think Minnesota could beat Boston. I definitely wouldn't pick the Clippers, the Suns, Pelicans, Sacramento. So yeah, of the 10 teams that theoretically have a shot to win the NBA championship, if they face Boston, I think five would have a shot to win. I would definitively pick four of them. Four of them. Denver, Dallas, Lakers, Warriors. Now the problem with the Lakers is they're getting knocked down in round one. Grady, I think the 2020 pandemic, LeBron was still by far the best player in the world, but I won't kill you for saying 2018. Yeah, I mean, listen, don't get me wrong, LeBron was awesome in 2020, but I still think the gap was beginning to close with Giannis, KD, Steph was still in the heart of his prime. Let's put it this way. It was a lot closer in 2020 than it was in 2018. I remember back in the APB target, KD's better than LeBron. It's like, at what? A mid-range jumper? Like, okay. LeBron's taking a terrible Cavs team to the finals. You know, KD's on a, and I don't fault KD for this, but KD's on a team that won 73 games in a finals without him. Like, that matters. And for the record, in that 2018 finals, KD wasn't even the best player on his own team, even though he ended up getting finals MVP, even though Steph outscored him in three of the four games. Neither here nor there. Transition to the NFL draft. So we are 10 days away from the first round. It's hard to believe we are this close, ladies and gentlemen, to the first round of the draft. And the stories, per usual, with the exception being 2022, which is more of a defensive draft. This year, a lot of quarterbacks, wide receivers, offensive linemen. It's that kind of draft this year. Not a lot of great defensive prospects, by and large. And, of course, it's quarterbacks league, as I've said for 2.5-3 years on this show. So we're going to talk about the quarterbacks. So J.J. McCarthy is perceived by many to be the third best quarterback in the draft. Like, Most have, including myself, have Caleb at number one. Then it's a debate between Jaden Daniels, between Drake May at number two. I personally like Michael Penix at two. The fact that Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix were not invited to the NFL draft green room tells me they're probably going to slip, which hope against hope. I'm crossing my fingers, my Steelers take Michael Penix Jr. because I freaking love that kid. Great in the pocket, big arm, deadly accurate, throws a beautiful ball. I think the kid's going to be really, really special. Nonetheless, Daniels, I think by everything that I'm hearing out of Washington, Daniels going number two. Like that's, I don't think we should even have an argument, a debate, a conversation. Caleb's going number one, Chicago. Jaden Daniels going number two to Washington. That's everything I'm hearing. And I like Daniels. I think when you have that type of athletic upside, there's something there. JJ McCarthy by many is perceived to be the third. And I completely disagree. Of the six quarterbacks that we have been talking about, Caleb, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, JJ McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, those six, I think JJ easily has the lowest upside. Now, one could argue he has a higher floor than guys like Drake May, who has a way higher ceiling, but man, I'm not quite sure if he hits it. He feels to me like the classic, a little Will Levis-esque, although his mechanics remind you a lot of Justin Herbert, where, my gosh, if he hits his potential, watch out for Drake May. And if he doesn't, he could be a career backup. Like, it's that kind of boom or bust. There's a big risk taking Drake May, and we'll see who decides to take that risk come Thursday or maybe come Friday if he slips to the second round like Will Levis did. Okay, so you have that. Jaden Daniels, again, I definitely like Daniels in terms of the physical upside. I think Daniels has, at his time at LSU, improved drastically as a pure pocket thrower. I remember the first time I ever watched Jaden Daniels, he was actually playing my Vols. In Tennessee, that year was really special, and if not for an injury to Hendon Hooker, dang, it could have been something amazing. But I was watching this kid, I'm like, man, he is not accurate at all. Come back the second year, I'm like, holy crap, this guy's on the money. And obviously, we know what he can do with his legs. He won the Heisman Trophy. This to me, and that he met with the Patriots recently, did JJ McCarthy. If New England takes him at number three, I think it will be a sign to me that they have not moved past the old idea of there's a system in New England, the Patriot way, do your job. It's like, no, it was the Tom Brady way. Not to take credit from Belichick, because Belichick to me is the greatest defensive coach of all time. I absolutely believe that. From his days with the Giants, with the Patriots, we saw Belichick without Brady before Brady even was a Patriot, before Belichick was a Patriot. So Belichick, after Brady left, he has two playoff appearances and I think one playoff win in that stretch. Meanwhile, we've seen Andy Reid without Mahomes gets to a Super Bowl and multiple conference title games. Like, he's been successful without Patrick. He wins Super Bowls, though, with Patrick. This, to me, would say, well, JJ McCarthy, we know he doesn't have a high ceiling. We know he's probably closer to a finished product than some of these guys like Caleb, Jaden, Drake, some of these guys. But we feel like we can integrate him into our system. Here's my question. What's the system? What is it? At least in the offensive side of the ball. I think New England's going to be good on defense because Belichick ran it for years. Jerome Mayo is a Belichick protege. Obviously was a great defensive captain for years in Foxborough. I think he'll have the defense in good shape. It's the offensive side of the ball you worry about. It's the offensive play calling you worry about. And quite literally, the Patriots have the worst skill position group in the league. Carolina has an argument, but Adam Thielen's productive. He's fine. Not what he used to be, but he's okay. If you draft JJ McCarthy, here's the question to me. Then what's the end goal? Do you feel like you have the capital, the assets to build something around him? Because to me, when you draft a guy to situations that are an objective joke, Houston Texans, you better draft a really, really special player. And I like Stroud more than Bryce Young, although I still have some faith in Bryce. I think the situation in Carolina around him is awful. I like Stroud more than Bryce. Didn't think he was going to be special. Clearly, the Texans saw something I didn't. They put the right coaching staff around him, right pieces. But here's the thing. As great as CJ was, he did have pieces. He did have Tank Dell. He did have Nico Collins. He did have Dalton Schultz. He did have a guy in Slovic, who's proven himself to be a really good play caller. Same, D'Amico Ryan's been proven himself to be a really solid head coach. And the Texans have obviously improved a lot this offseason, adding Stephon Diggs, Joe Mixon. Will Anderson, by the way, was another draft pick. To me, when you go to a situation where it is you are absolutely coming into this draft one of the five worst teams in the league. You need to draft a special, special talent. And J.J. McCarthy simply is not that. I think he'll be okay. But what it will also show me also is that the Patriots didn't learn from previous mistakes. Where, let's be honest, Belichick's coaching staff, himself, McDaniels, we know Patricia, given how Detroit players respond to him. Heck, we know Raiders players, how they responded to McDaniels. There was always a sense of entitlement and arrogance that the system is more important than the player. Of course, when Tom left in 2020 and won a Super Bowl immediately with the freaking Bucks, like that completely dismantled that. But the Patriots maintained that and said, you know what, we're going to draft a low-ceiling, high-floor kid out of Alabama named Mac Jones. Not that athletic, not that great of arm strength, but hey, he's precise, he's accurate. We can fit him into our system. There wasn't a system, and Mac Jones was a disaster. Now, I like J.J. McCarthy more than Mac Jones. I like his temperament better than Mac Jones. I think he's more gifted athletically than Mac Jones. Like, I don't think J.J. McCarthy is going to be a disaster in the NFL. I do think he could be a disaster in New England. So I don't really get, to me, it feels as if you're trying to carry on the Belichick legacy. It feels like you're sort of, you know, holding on to the past to a certain degree. And again, a past where the difference maker, great as Belichick was on the defensive side, that guy who wore number 12 made all the difference in the world. And we all know this. Jaden Daniels could be gone with the second pick, I believe. Obviously, we know Caleb's going number one to Chicago. Penix has high upside. Man, Penix can sling it. He's got an arm. He's accurate. He's good in the pocket. I'm not very high on Bo Nix because Bo Nix, to me, I think he's even more so. I think J.J. McCarthy could end up being better than Bo Nix because what's Bo start? 61, 62 games in college versus his record. It's like, this is probably the closest thing we're going to get to what Bo Nix is. Drake May, to me, Drake May, I'd respect the Drake May pick a lot more if I were New England because that tells me, okay, they are swinging for the fences. Like J.J. McCarthy is not good enough to take a downtrodden franchise with almost no assets anywhere. And it goes back to what I said about 2 weeks ago about the Patriots with the number 3 pick, is that to me, the decision is pretty simple. If there's, after the first two quarterbacks go to the Bears, Caleb, and to the Commanders, I strongly believe it to be Jaden Daniels. At that point, you'll have 4 quarterbacks left, we assume. If you don't love any of those guys, if you don't think, okay, if we're not just in love with any of them, we trade the pick. We trade down, we get assets, we kind of put a team together. We go get a quarterback next year. Dak Prescott's going to be on the market. They could go draft a guy high up in the draft because they won't have a good record. Instead, they will potentially go with the typical high floor, low ceiling, J.J. McCarthy. Hey, listen, he won a lot at Michigan with the system around him. Yeah, it's because the system had NFL offensive linemen and Blake Corum. That's what made the difference. And he had Jim Harbaugh. He's not going to have that in New England. I can make a strong case that the talent around him on the offensive side of the ball, excluding offensive line, as good as it was in Michigan, is probably better than it was in Foxborough. Certainly the running game absolutely is. So I think this would be a horrible decision by the Patriots brass if they decide to go through with this, and a sign that they just can't let go of the past or what they perceive to be the reason behind their past success. And J.J. McCarthy, again, I like the kid. He seemed like a good kid. All reports say, man, he's good at the whiteboard, but didn't we hear the same thing about Mac Jones? Exact same thing. I don't know. A lot of times, again, I liken it to relationships. Like when you break up with somebody, you tend to go out with somebody who's like the opposite. Like, for example, if you're with an introverted person and they're almost like too quiet. I'm an introverted person, so I can say this. They're almost too quiet. And then you go to the like outgoing, boisterous, energetic extrovert, but then it's just a little too much for you. Like you often go in a direction on the other side of the coin. The Patriots seem to be saying, okay, well, that didn't work with Mac Jones. Not a lot of upside there. Let's go with another low upside kid who's slightly more athletic. Well, he won a lot at college. He won a national championship. We've seen a lot of national championship winning quarterbacks that have amounted to nothing in the NFL. I don't think J.J. McCarthy is going to be awful for his career, but in New England, what does he have to support him? What does he have? We'll see what the coaching staff looks like. Well, you know, I'll give that time to grow itself, but He's got maybe one of the worst receiving corps, if not the worst receiving corps in the league. Not to mention, he plays a division where Buffalo's been the king of the AFC since 2020. Miami's talented. The Jets don't believe in them, that they're more talented than the Patriots, no question. I don't know. This doesn't seem to make sense at all, as far as I'm concerned. Grady Edwards, I'd rather us pick up a receiver, like I said. Well, listen, you got a lot to choose from. Marvin Harrison, to me, is the best, and I think Marvin Harrison is going to be the best receiver in football in 2 to 3 years. I just think it's his speed. It's like he's got everything. Speed, crisp route running, all of it. Good hands. Does not drop passes. But Link Neighbors? Oh, I think he's got all the potential in the world to be great. I don't see why people have him over Marvin Harrison on some boards, but I think he's going to be a really special player. So it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world where, hey, we draft a receiver now, we try and ace the draft second round on, and we draft our guy next year. Or you draft a guy. If Michael Penix Jr. falls to you in the second round, oh my gosh, gift wrapped. Here we go. He says, I don't think play. Okay, this is something I talked about on Friday, Grady. He says, I don't think Brady plays again, but if he did, for what team? For me, it's the Pats. The only incentive to him coming back to New England is just, hey, I retire for good as a Patriot. Because if I'm not mistaken, when he retired from the Bucs, I don't think he retired. Like, he didn't sign like a one-day contract with the Patriots. Like, and even still, like, he'd retire a Patriot, but it'd be kind of the classic legend limps away from his game. Like, Brady was not great his last year in 2022 with the Buccaneers. He was not great, but he threw 25 touchdowns. He was still a more than serviceable player. But like I talked about, to me, Brady's not signing with anybody for week one. There's no way. I don't think his body can, at 47 years old, be able to take a whole season. But again, could he pull a Joe Flacco mid-December? Some team calls, hey, Tom, we think we have a good enough team to win the Super Bowl. Can you come in with us and us go on a special ride for 2 months? I suggested Pittsburgh. He's used to defensive coaches. He's got way better weapons in there than he had at the end of his time in New England. He's got an awesome defense. He's used to having those. You know, he's used to cold weather. But more likely is if the Purdy thing doesn't work, or God forbid, knock on wood, this doesn't happen. But if Purdy were to go down, I love Josh Dobbs, but I would take 47-year-old Tom over Josh with the weapons he have in San Francisco. You never know. But the only incentive, Grady, to me of him retiring as a Patriot is just to retire as a Patriot. That's it. So, like, Kevin Garnett came back to the Timberwolves for a year, retired there. So it could be something like that. But I don't think, and Shreve pat his stats a little, but again, I don't think that's something that's just crazy important, Tom. Like, oh, I got to hold on to that passing record. That's the rings have always drove Tom Brady. We know this. Let's see. Okay, we have some Michael Penix Jr. news. This is from Jordan Schultz. Oh, interesting. Okay, here we go. So this to me matters. Michael Penix Jr. You'll like this, Grady, and Patriots fans will like this. He is going to visit the Patriots tonight for dinner and tomorrow with the Patriots as well, followed by the Commanders Tuesday evening and Wednesday. So he's got a lot of meetings, a lot of dinners and meetings, obviously, with players, coaches, or maybe not players, but coaches, organization. And we're seeing this the time where all the, again, Caleb doesn't need to meet with anybody, but everybody else, meet with the Commanders, meet with New England, with the Giants and teams like that, teams that are in position to potentially take a quarterback. But I don't know. If Penix were available at 3, I'd take him if I were the Patriots. But if they're not in love with Penix, then to me, trade the pick. Or, sure, Grady, you could take Marvin Harrison Jr. because he's that special of a talent. But to me, taking the low-ceiling guy, that would be the worst decision the Patriots can make. But if they did, it wouldn't shock me if they did. Grady, I could see a scenario where Kraft takes a quarterback and everybody goes into camp and is like, I hate what I see, and tries to pay Brady like $35, $40 million a year to distract everyone concerned by the draft news. Maybe, but that to me would feel like, unless some craft is built enough. I'm about 140 pages into the Dynasty, the book by, what's his name? What's the author's name? Jeff Benedict, who's a tremendous author, wrote the Dynasty that just became the Apple TV doc. I haven't seen the doc. I'm going to read the book first and then watch the doc. But through 140 pages, it's more Kraft-centric because Belichick, I mean, I've just gotten to the part where Belichick's hired by the Patriots. Brady hasn't even been drafted. But that's say Kraft has built enough equity in New England, given the last 30 years or so that he's owned the team, to make a couple of bad decisions from time to time. But that feels like a really desperate move. And even Tom, like, let's see, offer Tom, hey, 35, 40 mil for a couple months of football. Oh, yeah, I think Tom would consider it. I don't care how rich he is, 35, 40 million is 35, 40 million. But all that to say, I think the McCarthy pick would be an absolute disaster. Absolute disaster. And yeah, that's where I'm at. Okay, so back to the NBA and to the New York Knicks, who have been playing really all season long, they've been playing good basketball, but in the season on a 5-game winning streak, end up leapfrogging the Milwaukee Bucks to be the 2 seed. And listen, let's be real, they deserve to be the 2 seed. They've been playing better than Milwaukee. I think they have, since the Doc Rivers hiring, the Bucks are 2 games under 500. It's just been a mess. I've talked about it at length. No need to relitigate that. But Jalen Brunson is, if I had an MVP vote, and I did this on Friday, I put out my All-NBA teams first, second, and third, and then my award winners. I had Jokic as MVP, but I can absolutely see the case for Shea and for Luka. I think both have more than legitimate cases. My guess is Jokic probably wins it, but it's close. If I had an MVP ballot, it would go as follows. From 1 to 5, Jokic, Luka, SGA, Brunson, and then Giannis. I'm putting Giannis in there. Giannis averaged 31-11 on 61% shooting. Like, I can't just ignore that. He's been one of the few bright spots for Milwaukee. What Brunson has done this season is incredible. So Julius Randle was an all-star. We poo-poo Julius Randle, and his playoff resume is not great. But this is a guy who's a 20-plus point-per-game guy. He's a good player. He's a good fit with Jalen Brunson. Since he went down in late January, Jalen Brunson has been playing incredible basketball. We could show you his numbers. By the way, again, as I forgot to mention earlier, my apologies. All graphics provided by Alfred Parsar Jr. Shout out to Alfred. And all stats provided by our friends at StatMuse. Jalen Brunson. Since Julius Randle went down, he's averaging 31.5 points per game, 7 assists a game, 3 rebounds on 48, 37, 86 shooting splits. He has 7 games this year, or 7 games in the stretch of scoring 40 or more points. He had 1 game where he scored 60 against the San Antonio Spurs. So the guy has been on an absolute roll. We know right now, and we knew a year ago, like, man, Mark Cuban should have shelled out that money to pay Jalen Brunson in 2022 when he left in free agency to go to the Knicks. And listen, the Knicks as the 2 seed, they're in a little bit of a, I don't want to say a pickle. They're not a pickle, but they're going to get a tough first round matchup. And I'm going to predict the game featuring the, well, at least, you know, obviously we know the opponent that they'll face in the first round, either Miami or Philadelphia. Both of those, Miami did beat them last year in the second round of the playoffs, beat them in 6 games, obviously doing so without home court advantage. The Sixers are playing amazing since Embiid came back. So either way, it's a tough matchup. And I'm not sure who for New York can really guard Embiid, although Embiid's playoff history, you never know. But if New York wins a playoff series, and for the record, if they do knock off Miami or Philadelphia, if you look right now at East, the team that they would play in the second round is either Milwaukee, who's self-imploding, or Indiana, who plays literally no defense. So win one playoff series, Knicks are probably in the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in I don't know how long, probably since the Patrick Ewing days. If that happens, I think it's if they win one, but if they win one, to me, they're going to win two. I think they're going to land Giannis. And I've been saying, and I'm getting a lot of pushback from Bucks fans over the weekend. It hurt my feelings. I could barely sleep at night. It was just crushing me. But I said, listen, the Giannis stuff in Milwaukee, he doesn't seem happy. There's been some weird quotes from last year. He was threatening to leave last year until they traded for Damian Lillard. That hasn't worked. We know small market teams, you've got to go out of your way, more so than an LA or a Miami or a Dallas or a team like that, or you have New York, Philadelphia. You have to, if you're Milwaukee, if you're Oklahoma City, like Oklahoma City ticked off Kevin Durant, left, and won 2 championships without him. Like that's the reality of being a small market team in the NBA. And if Milwaukee looks at, or if Giannis looks at Milwaukee, let's see, we're old. We're about to potentially go on 4 head coaches in 3 years, including 3 in the last 2. This is probably isn't going to work for me at all. I'm in the prime of my career. I just averaged 31-11 on 61% from the field. I don't think that's ever been done before. I can win more in New York. I can win more in Golden State or potentially in LA with the Lakers or the Heat. I can win with more with those teams. He went finals MVPs, maybe even some regular season MVPs to boot. The pick and roll with Giannis and Brunson. Holy smokes. You got Brunson with the floater game. He's got a good mid-range jumper. He can shoot the three. And Giannis is the freight train running the back. I mean, Brunson's making this work with Mitchell Robinson. He's made it work with Julius Randle. Julius Randle's a good player. He's not Giannis. And Giannis would potentially get to stay out east, where now with him leaving the Bucks are completely off the table. You're sure you have to worry about Boston. Philadelphia is always going to be hanging around. But you look around the east, nobody's challenging a Brunson-Giannis duo. You'd probably have to get to the finals before anybody can make a legitimate push. So I think right now with the Knicks, the way they're playing, and since the OG Anunoby trade, I think they're like 20-3, 20-5, something like that. They like since they traded for OG from the Toronto Raptors back in January, it's been a different team. Now, again, to me, the fatal flaw, and I'll talk about strengths and weaknesses later this week. Every playoffs, I've did this a couple years ago, been doing it since. Every NBA playoffs and NFL playoffs, I do a strengths and weaknesses. Like, what's the one thing, or not strengths, really just weaknesses. What's the thing that's going to stop you from winning the championship? And for the Knicks, spoiler, the thing for the Knicks is, as great of a coach Tom Thibodeau is, man, he runs those guys into the ground. I mean, yeah, you know, DiVincenzo, I think, played every minute of the game yesterday against Chicago. There was one game where Josh Hart played every minute of the game against Golden State. Like, at some point or another, that's going to take a toll on your body. As great as these young athletes are, and Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Hart are all under the age of 30, to my knowledge, they're still human beings. It's going to take a toll on you eventually over the course of 82 games and the playoffs. And so that could hurt them. But yeah, Giannis maybe takes a little bit of the strain off of you. So, you know, I just offensively the Knicks have been great. Again, you know, defensively they've been good. And Brunson's controlled all of it. Brunson's proven himself to be the typical classic. He's the classic point guard with a little bit of a mix on the modern guy. Like if you had to take who's a modern style point guard, Steph and Dame, sure. Let's just say Steph. If you combine Steph, took a bit of Steph's game and combined it with John Stockton, Jason Kidd, classic point guard, and made them one player, I feel like it'd be Jalen Brunson. Like, can shoot the three, but he has a floater. He has a mid-range. He can handle the basketball effectively. He's a tremendous leader. You pair him up with Giannis. You tell me Giannis isn't going to look at New York and say, man, Madison Square Garden, stability at coach, good set of teammates around me, Jalen Brunson winning playoff series with me not even there. Weak Eastern Conference, the Leastern Conference, if you will. It's pretty appealing. Young team, unlike the old team I'm with. Big market. I don't know. Seems like something that would appeal to him. I think it's, again, I've been on the record saying this. Giannis is probably going to come back in the playoffs this first round series against Indiana. Probably going to come back, but point blank period, he's going to play his last game as a Buck this month. Or again, the series may bleed into May. We're going to be technical with it. Giannis is going to play his final game as a Buck within the month. Let's put it that way. Prior to the second round. So, because the playoffs are starting a little later than usual. I think the first round starts in like April 20th. So technically Giannis and the Bucks wouldn't be eliminated by then. But we know the reality of the situation is that he's clearly not happy. We see his quotes. We see all the chaos going on with the Bucks. And meanwhile, the Knicks are just chugging along. Brunson looks comfortable. Brunson's been playing outstanding basketball. I think it's a great fit. Grady, if the Bucks go home in round one, is Doc fired? I've said before, I think Doc may resign. He may just say, enough of this. I'm out of here. I mean, you've seen, and J.J. Redick got on him for this. And J.J. Redick played for Doc in L.A. with the Clippers. But Doc has had quotes this year where he said, I didn't realize it was going to be this hard. It's like, then why'd you take the job? You know what I'm saying? Like, why'd you take it? And you didn't realize it was going to be this hard. Dude, you're a veteran coach. Like, you'd think you'd know your way around the block in certain ways, shapes, and forms. Grady, when Jordan went to Washington, do you think he was going to hit James Harden rocket breakout year? What do you mean? You're talking about, did you think he was going to, what do you mean? Because obviously Jordan retired in 98 after he got his sixth title in Chicago, came back 3 years later, played for the Wizards, I mean, had some good moments. He had one point, a 50-point game, but was obviously, he wasn't Michael. He was kind of out of shape, smoked cigars. Okay. Grady says, when Jordan went to Washington, do you think he was going to have his James or Jordan? Oh, my gosh. My bad. Okay, Grady, I thought you were talking about Michael Jordan. That's totally my bad. He said Jordan Poole. As in Jordan, he meant Jordan Poole. My bad. So when Jordan Poole went to Washington, did you think he was going to hit his Harden rocket breakout year? Maybe, given the shots he was taking, but I've been critical of Harden. But Harden's, to his credit, has led the league in assists multiple times. Has led the league in scoring a myriad of times. I mean, I'm working right now, and we're in the early stages of this, but an off-season project for a 21 greatest NBA players of the 21st century. And Harden, I think, is absolutely on the list. He's absolutely one of the 21 best players in that stretch. And so, yeah, a little teaser there. But, I mean, I looked at Harden's resume. Again, playoff history, I've waxed poetic about that enough. But his regular season history was really good. And not like that's exactly breaking news, but do I think it was Jordan? Did Jordan Poole think that? Maybe. I mean, it was his team essentially at that point, at least him and Kyle Kuzma. Especially once they let Porzingis go and moved him to Boston, I guess. But at the same time, oh, Lord. That was not a fun year last year as a Warriors fan. This year was turbulent, but at least has the regular season finished strong, and I'm confident the Warriors can get in the playoffs and do something special, as Steve Kerr has talked about. But, man, watching Jordan Poole last year was a frustrating experience. And I imagine for the few Wizards fans that are out there, my condolences, because not only are you strapped to Jordan Poole, you're even worse. You're strapped to that bad contract, and so they're in a rough spot. They're definitely in a rough spot. Okay, before we get out of here, it has been a long time, I guess it's the football season, that I have predicted multiple games at once. So this is fun. This feels like the NFL, and I will include the segments that we do during the NFL season, because you know, during the NFL season, I do my favorite segments. I do Bryson's Bleak Bets, like the game that I don't have any confidence in whatsoever. But you got to pick them all. Like, there's pick integrity. You got to pick them all. There's the upset of the week. So obviously the game, whatever the point spread, whichever team is facing the biggest point spread that I think is going to win that particular week, that's my upset of the week. And my favorite segment on Carving It Up is called
Betting Man.
If I were a bet man, and that's the game that I feel most confident, again, if I were a bet man, keyword there, if I were a bet man, the game I feel most confident in putting money on the line for. And so we'll do that. There's going to be six in total, but right now we know for a fact four play-in tournament games, two out east, two out west. We'll predict them right now in Carve Up Live. So let's go and get the background music going right now. Let's get the intense playoff level music. It's playoff basketball. It's really good playoff, but you know what? We will start out west with Los Angeles Lakers and the New Orleans Pelicans. So, listen, they literally just played yesterday, and the Lakers smacked the Pelicans. They won 124-108, and they won by 16, so you look at that score, and you're like, man, they really controlled that game. No. That score is not indicative of what happened. The Lakers at one point, I think, led by 29 or something. They smoked New Orleans start to finish. LeBron James, just to give you a fun little stat line, LeBron had 13 assists in the first half. First half! In the game in totality, LeBron James just casually went out there and dropped 28, 17, and 11. Triple-double to end the regular season. This is, by the way, the 20th consecutive year LeBron's averaged 25 or more, which is crazy. Pelicans come in, I imagine, quite deflated, because coming into Sunday with a win, they didn't need any outside help. They controlled their own destiny. With a win, they would have been in the playoffs as the sixth seed, would have had to pay no mind to the play-in tournament. Now they're in it. You know, good news for them is they host it, but against a team that literally just smacked them. Now, this game's going to be closer because we know, listen, it's hard to beat a team twice in a row. It's even hard to blow out a team twice in a row. So, listen, New Orleans is going to come in. They got good veterans, CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, who's one of my favorite players, back in the lineup. We struggled a little bit yesterday. We're still kind of incorporating him back in. But I think another game, another opportunity to get on the floor with Zion, which I'm not real sure he really fits with Zion. I'd move one of them if I were the Pelicans, get some compensation. But Listen, this season, the Pelicans got throttled by the Lakers. At one point, they got smacked, I think, by 40 or something against the Lakers in the in-season tournament. They really struggled against them. Lakers are playing great basketball. They're one of the best offensive teams of the league in the last few months. LeBron James, again, this season, or in the last seven games, is averaging 30 points a game. We have the stat. LeBron James is averaging 30 points a game, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, and is shooting 51% from three, and the Lakers are 6-1 in that stretch. So I'm going to roll with the purple and gold. Going to go with the Lakers to win this game, 116-105. This game will be slightly closer. I think the Lakers will kind of pull away in the end to beat the New Orleans Pelicans. So 8-seed Lakers, they'll knock off the 7-seed Pelicans, take the Lakers plus a point and a half, and they will be in the playoffs as the 7-seed and face their doom against the defending champion Denver Nuggets. Lakers in. They beat the Pelicans 116-105, and they will officially be in the playoffs this year, second year in a row. But the problem is, second year in a row, they run into Denver. It is time for my favorite segment of Carving Up Live. It is called If I Were a Bet Man. Man, it feels so good to say those words again. I'm looking at the Golden State Warriors, who are playing the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento. And in this game, you look at the line right here. Golden State is a... Do we have it? Oh, my gosh. Looks like we lost it. Golden State against the Sacramento Kings. My phone's freezing right now. Oh my gosh. I think it's 1.5. I think it's the point spread. Golden State's favorite -2.5, rather. My bad. So these games have been about as airtight as you can imagine. Okay, so Golden State beat the Kings, second game of the season. It was a close game. Steph was scored 40 plus. They kind of pulled away in the fourth quarter. The second game they faced, Klay hit a game winner. Warriors win by a point. The third game, Malik Monk hits an off-balance game winner. Kings win by a point. The last time they faced, the Kings won by a point. So the margin of victory in the last three games between these two has been +3, which is mind-boggling. So, and we know last year the Warriors and the Kings played that classic seven-game series, back and forth, twists and turns. King took the first two. Warriors took the next three. Then the Kings got one. And the Warriors went to Sacramento, and Steph Curry dropped the first 50-point game 7 in NBA history. Kings are not playing well right now. Sacramento, over their last 10 games, if you look at their record, especially without Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter, Sacramento is 4-6 in their last 10. Domantas Sabonis kind of struggled a little bit the last couple, and we know Sabonis really struggled against Draymond Green and Kevon Looney. I'm not sure how much Looney will play tomorrow. We'll see. But again, Sacramento better last year on offense. Better last year in terms of having Monk and Huerter healthy. The Warriors worse last year than this year in terms of wins, in terms of defense, in terms of Jordan Poole. So they come into Sacramento with the third best record in the NBA since late January. Come on, man. If I were a bet man, Warriors -2.5. Give me that and a bag of chips. Warriors win this one 113-101. This will be, more than anything, a defensive clinic on Malik Monk, on De'Aaron Fox, but more so on Domantas Sabonis. Fox can get his. Fox is going to do what he's got to do to put the Kings in position to win. Sabonis really, really struggles. He's kind of a limited player from a shooting perspective against Draymond Green or against whatever big the Warriors throw out there, be it Looney, be it Trayce Jackson-Davis. That's going to be a matchup that favors the Warriors greatly. Warriors win. They beat Sacramento. They eliminate the Kings for the second year in a row, and they will advance to play the Pelicans in New Orleans on Friday. The winner of that game is in the playoffs. The loser is done. To the Eastern Conference, it is now time for my bit anticlimactic here. Doesn't look like we have the upset of the week. We don't have the upset of the week, okay? So whatever. Upset of the week. Give me the Miami Heat over the Philadelphia 76ers 109-107. And here is why. So Miami is a 4.5-point underdog. And for the record, I completely understand why. Listen, Philadelphia has won 8 straight games with Joel Embiid back in the lineup. Embiid has been awesome. The one game Embiid missed, Maxey dropped 50 points. So Philadelphia's playing outstanding basketball right now. They were able to climb into being the 7th seed, host this playing game. However, and I don't have from this season, from the 82-game sample size we got for the Miami Heat, from what we've seen, I don't have a shred of evidence to say they're better than Philadelphia. Philly has a better roster. Philly's best player is better than Miami's. Heck, Philly's second best player. It's close. I like Bam more than Maxey, and I really like Maxey. It's close. Bench probably favors Philadelphia. Philly has a much better coach than they had a year ago, although I think Spo's the best coach in basketball with the Heat. There's just something about that. You know, do or die game on the road. Heat like to win big road playoff games. They did, it should be noted, beat Philadelphia on the road in a game 6 2 years ago in the second round. They beat, facing elimination, the Boston Celtics, heavily favored Boston Celtics, when Jimmy dropped 40 plus in TD Garden. They won last year in Milwaukee, heavy underdog, closed out the Bucks in Milwaukee. They were also able to beat Boston in a game 7 after blowing a 3-0 lead, destroyed the Boston Celtics in game 5. So the Heat like winning big road playoff games. Again, I know this isn't technically a playoff game, but it sort of is. The thing with Philadelphia, it's, again, it's the reverse. Everything, every shred of data and evidence, particularly with Joel Embiid is in the lineup, tells you Philly's not just better than Miami. Philly's one of the best teams in the league when Embiid's healthy. There's something about when that regular season clock ends and the playoff clock begins, and Joel Embiid is a different player, and not in a good way. His numbers plummet. He's never been beyond the second round of the playoffs. Meanwhile, the Miami Heat have been in the last 4 years, been to 3 conference finals and 4 or 2 NBA finals, rather. This, I don't have a reason this year to pick Miami. I can't present anything to you to say, oh, yeah, Miami's better than Philadelphia. But it's playoff time. It's play-in time. Miami Heat got to the finals out of the play-in tournament a year ago. Who's to say? Who's to say they can't do it again? So once again, upset of the week. Give me Miami Heat over the Philadelphia 76ers by a final score of 109-107. Upset of the week. Take the Heat plus 4.5. Miami wins. They are in the playoffs as the 7th seed. They will face the New York Knicks, and that series will be like a football series. You want to talk about physicality? My gosh. Eric Spoelstra versus Tom Thibodeau. Brunson versus Butler. Oh my gosh, that'd be a fantastic series in the first round. We get some good first round series coming up this weekend. Finally, this is a game to say who gets eliminated on Friday. Whose vacation is postponed by 3 days? Let's put it that way. Atlanta Hawks, Chicago Bulls, 9 seed, 10 seed. Both teams are under 500. I hate to do this with my man John. I don't want to disrespect this team too much, but the fact remains it's just not. Neither team's really that good. Now, DeMar DeRozan, to his credit, again, is second in basically every number that matters in terms of clutch stats to Steph Curry. Steph should win Clutch Player of the Year. DeMar, to me, should come in second. Both have been fantastic. DeMar's been great in the clutch this year. And if you look again at Atlanta's side, in a weird way, as weird as it sounds, they have a winning record. I believe I saw the stat the other day without Trae Young and DeJounte Murray in the lineups. So they've been playing good basketball. Murray had a kind of a hot streak in March. Things sort of cooled off. We know Atlanta plays no defense. They're one of the worst defensive backcourts I've seen in my life. There's another report. This feels like a repeat of last year. If you remember a year ago, Atlanta was in this, not a similar situation. They were actually the 8th seed going on the road to Miami, and there were the Trae Young trade rumors. The Hawks might move him, and then Trae went off of Miami. The Hawks completely outplayed the Heat from start to finish, end up getting in the playoffs and giving Boston a tough run for their money in the first round. I simply don't think they're capable of doing that. Trae just came back from injury. It's on the road. It's in Chicago. That's still a great home court, you know, fan base in the United Center. No Zach LaVine, but Kobe White's had a great season. He's going to be up for most improved player. So I'm going to roll the Chicago Bulls. Again, they're going to get eliminated on Friday, but I'm going to roll Chicago by a hair, -3.5. By the way, I should have mentioned this was my Bryson's bleak bet game. It's the one game I've absolutely zero confidence in predicting, but you got to predict them all. And this is not one that's going to exactly have me on the edge of my seat. Bulls win 115-111 over the Atlanta Hawks, and they will delay their vacation by 72 hours. That's just the reality, because Miami and Philadelphia are both getting in. Both are significantly better than Chicago and Atlanta, no question. So there you go. There's my play-in predictions. So interesting. So Woj, do we have this? Might have some. Okay, here we go. Just got some breaking news just now. This is from Shams Charania. According to Shams, do we have the air horn? We might as well do the air horn for breaking news. Breaking news! According to Shams Charania. Hold on, let's play the air horn of ladder. Breaking news! That was better. According to Shams, Team USA is finalizing 11 of its 12-man Olympic roster. The players are as follows. LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Devin Booker, Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards, Bam Adebayo, and Tyrese Halliburton. So that is that 11? That's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 11. So we have, okay, let me make sure. 2, 3, 6, 9, okay. So Team USA, this is again from Shams. This is fun breaking news at the end of the show today. Team USA has finalized 11 of its 12-man Olympic roster. So quickly, if anybody's in the comments, let me know who you think is going to be the 12th. So let's just hash this out. So your starting lineup is going to be Steph. At least I think the starting lineup is going to be Steph, Booker, KD, Embiid. They may start Anthony Davis for defense. Wouldn't blame them. That to me feels like the starting five. Steph, Booker, KD, LeBron, Embiid. So then you have a wing Tatum off the bench. You have a wing guard off the bench in Holiday. You have a defensive big in AD. Another defensive big in Adebayo. Ant as a scoring combo guard. And Tyrese Halliburton, who's your assist guy. This feels like they could use another like 9-inch wing. Kawhi probably won't do it. I don't know. Who are they snubbing? So I'm looking again. The NBA is so international today. Like it's, you got to, kind of really look to find your American stars. So let's see. So Giannis obviously he's going to play for Greece. Dame is not going to play because, again, he's a guard. They already have enough of those. They may go Jaylen Brown, which wouldn't shock me. I'm just looking at the East. They've got their bigs. They already got their bigs. Got Embiid. They got Adebayo and they got Anthony Davis. Looking down the list. So Eastern Conference only has Paolo Banchero. I'm pretty sure Paolo is American. So you could ask Paolo. Shea is Canadian, so Shea can't play for Team USA. Does Denver have anybody? You could ask an Aaron Gordon potentially, although is Aaron Gordon American? It's hard to differentiate, Americans and Canadians. This is gonna make so many people roll their eyes. I'd at least consider Zion, but I just don't know if his body's going to hold up. This is going to make people want to pull their hair out. If Paul George would be my first call, given how they've constructed the roster, Paul George is the first guy that I would call. If Paul George doesn't compete, I would then call a guy who's been a multi-time Olympian, multi-time gold medalist by the name of Mr. Draymond Green. Draymond won 2 gold medals. He got benched in 2016. He had a rough Olympics 8 years ago. 2021 Olympics, pretty good. It was a key contributor to that team. A defender, a tough guy, can get in the head of the other team. Because, this is going to be Team USA's hardest competition in a long time. I mean, because obviously they lost in 04, but that Team USA team wasn't that good. It just wasn't. The fact that, and the reports are that LeBron has kind of been talking to these guys, to Steph, to KD, to Tatum, to all these guys, to put together the squad to be able to compete against. Jokic is probably in the Olympics. Giannis. I mean, this is going to be a Shea for Canada. Canada, to me, has as good of a shot as anybody. France has Wemby. I'll tell you, this is going to be a tough road to winning gold for Team USA this Olympics. But I call Paul George. If he says no, I call Draymond Green. I would. Or Banchero. Banchero, to me, would be a good fit, too, with this team because they need another athletic wing guy. So that's who I go with. Now, Draymond's not athletic, but he's obviously a great defender still. So there you go. So, yeah, fun breaking news. I'm as jacked up for this Olympics for basketball as I've been for any just because of because the 2021 roster, LeBron wasn't there. Steph wasn't there. Steph wasn't there in 16. KD's really the only guy that's consistently Olympics in, Olympics out. He's been there since 2012, essentially. He's got 3 gold medals, has a chance to get 4, so KD can put together one heck of an Olympic resume. So there you go. And Steve Kerr's coaching, by the way. Steve Kerr's coaching. All right, that's all the time we have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by as always. Be sure to catch Carving Up Live on Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, be sure to like, share, comment, and please take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there if you're on YouTube. If you're not on YouTube, you can get on YouTube, hit that big red subscribe button. If you have not subscribed, again, it just takes a couple seconds. If you have, thank you. Thank you so much. Your support means the world. We're getting close to 1,000 subscribers, which would be a huge milestone and accomplishment. And it would be a shout out to everybody, because the fact of the matter is this show is nothing. It's nothing without the audience tuning in to come in and support. So thank you all so much. Tell your friends about it, your family about it. Just don't tell your sleeping cat about it. Just do not. My cat's in a pretty good mood today. He's been all right. So other than that, tell everybody you know about it. Also, Grid Network, 8 o'clock spot tomorrow night, Tuesday night, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific time, every Tuesday, the Grids, 8 o'clock spot is our game show on this network that I'm fortunate to be a part of. Definitely be sure to check that out. I get to be the host slash judge slash moderator. It's a game show. We have topics. You know, we give point totals out to who gives great takes, good takes, okay takes, and you don't get anything. You have a bad take. We haven't had a bad take thus far. The show launched in early August. We haven't had a bad take yet. For some reason, I have a feeling in the next couple weeks we're gonna get one. I don't know why. It feels like it's possible. It's on the docket. But 8 o'clock spot tomorrow night. Check it out. 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific time on the Grid Network's YouTube channel and Twitter account. Speaking of which, be sure to go subscribe to the Grid Network. That's GRYD, the Grid Podcast Network, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your podcasts, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your podcast, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any and everywhere you get your favorite podcast. Also, Patrick Brown, be sure to go check out his content on the Grid Network's website. He writes a lot of great pieces, and obviously on the podcast realm, YouTube, anywhere you get your pods, definitely some awesome content creators there as well. So definitely be sure to check them out. And check out the 8 o'clock spot tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Real quick. Okay, I can't read that list. Okay, it's just showing a list of, this is from NBA Central, the Twitter account. It's a list of guys that Team USA could consider adding. I think they need to add a wing guy. I consider Kawhi, Banchero, Paul George. If all three of those guys say no, I go after Draymond Green. I swear to you, I would. I really would. I think that'd be a good fit. But anywho's it. Steve Kerr will make the right decision. Grant Hill will make the right decision. The higher-ups for Team USA will do what they got to do to win us another gold. That would be 5 in a row. Since 08, 5 in a row. Yeah. Let's get 5 golds. Here we go. All right. As far as, again, 8 o'clock spot tomorrow at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. As far as Carving Up, we'll see you on Wednesday at 6 Eastern, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time after a big Warriors win in Sacramento. And we'll be in position. Win on Friday, and we are in, baby. We got Carving Up the Context. We got Bryce's Best 10. Potentially, we'll either do it Wednesday or Friday. NBA biggest weaknesses of every team that's in playoff contention. So be sure to stay tuned for that. All right. See you on Wednesday. Be sure to stay safe out there. Please be sure to take care of your physical as well as your mental health. And please, please, please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America. No matter where you lean, right, left, center, this is a problem we've got to address. It's something we've got to confront. There's no one solution, no matter what anybody on either side of the aisle tries to tell you. We've got to confront this as a nation, and we got to do it soon, because it's too many terrible things are happening out there. All right. See you on 8 o'clock spot tomorrow. See you on Carving Up Live. I shouldn't say a celebration. We're not going to celebrate a play and win. We are going to be happy about a play and win on Carving Up Live. The Warriors, it would appear, as the movie says, and as Tari Eason implored us to do, they're going to come out to play. And the run to another title starts in Sacktown tomorrow night. All right, see you on Wednesday. Stay safe out there. God bless y'all. Peace out. And shout out Caitlin Clark. Go number one tonight. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube, and be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on the Grid Network.